Accession number 16724, Ernest Taylor, Reel 6.
Mr. Taylor, Reel 6. You were back in the Alamein position, Mr. Taylor. Do you remember what date this would be? Time of the year?
No, I don't really. The main thing I remember about El Alamein is the barrage. You know, the 25-pounder, the artillery barrage. And I think that stuck in my mind. You know, it went on and on and on. It was like daylight, and that was it. And it was more action for them than anything else. You know, they're laying down the carpet.
You don't recall being in the line in other areas prior to this?
No. All that is a part that I don't remember much about. But I know, because I think there's. You were on, you know, it was during the go, it was a bit shocking and things like that, but there was the barrage, I remember, mostly.
Do you recall being
in... And we used to be travelling, naturally.
Do you recall being in the final attack to get through the Alamein line, Operation Supercharge, which I don't know
whether that was it, what I was in, or whether it was the beginning, I couldn't tell you. No, as I say, a memory block then, with a lot of things, you know.
What do you recall happened next?
Well, it was just a roll forward, and that's it, as far as I can remember, you know, forward, and it was travel again, up to these places again, you know, passing to Brook, because it was a quick move, you know, it was a quick move this time, it wasn't like it was before.
And do you recall the effect?
We're saying to be travelling, you know, travelling a lot quicker.
Do you recall the effect that Montgomery had on the army when he came in?
He has a hell of an effect on it, because he was strict, but he was really a real soldier. You're same as if you take notes. You sided with what he said. For all he used to, you know, demoralising the time, he had to do this. He wanted to. He didn't believe in, drinking or smoking. He was strict, you know. But the word, we didn't actually see him. But I mean, the word used to get back to you, you know.
You never saw him?
Never. I didn't see him, no. But word got back to where he was, and through these little bits of news prints and that you got. But he had a... No doubt about it, he made the difference, you know.
So you're moving forward, what's your next memory?
Well, the next memory is just passing all these different places. I think we were mostly near the coast, not at the coast, we didn't see it, but just looking at the different names that you'd never seen before, you know. And the next was up to Algiers, you know, up to the line, and that was it. But actually, in the line itself, that was...
Was this the Marath line?
The Marath line was harrowing, you know. I didn't remember a lot until we got there, but I lost a good friend there, that was with us.
Who was that?
Norman Albro. Not Norman, Richard Albro. Albro. What happened to... He was with us in beside the wadi, what they called Wadi Akritus. He was there, and we had to go in action. And he'd gone somewhere. I think it was to get ammunition or something like that. And next we knew that there was a mortar shell or something burst, and he must have been coming over. And he collapsed. Anyway, I remember mostly they put him into a brain carrier. Put him into a brain carrier and took him away. And away to, he was one of these jokers, you know, and he waved to us as he's passing. That was the finish of him. He went away. Later on, we got annoyed. Got a very small hole in the base of his spine, and it, I came and visited him at Dunstan when I came back. He was still in hospital at Dunstan, Newcastle there, in the military hospital. And when I went to see him, he'd been lying on one side for a couple of years, just one side. It was all sometimes it was the wind of that side and all the rest. He'd been lying, he couldn't ship, and then he died, you know, just after the war. But it was a good friend of mine. And that was the sort of thing, and we would, I remember, you see, we'd taken unawares as well for a lot, you know, we were just up to the front, and we were supposed to have these entrenching tools. Well, they were hardly any good at all, little spades. I remember what we first did, each of us, were tin hats up, and we were just digging like that to make small slit trenches, just enough for to lie in, so you could, you know, get yourself on the level with the ground. And we were lying in trenches about that deep.
About 18 inches?
Just something like that, yeah. Just dug them with our helmets, with the steel helmets. And that was after this lad had been taken, he was caught.
How did you?
I used to sit, I always remember this, before I'd finished digging my trench, the shrapnel, you could hear these bombs, the ones that used to burst above, you know, pick them to call them. And I was sitting like this, and I planned out how I could sit, and I managed to sit like this with me hat, with my tin hat, and I really imagined I had a cupboard for anything coming down on top of it like that.
Into like a tight little ball.
Yeah, uh-huh. And then, of course, during the lull, when they stopped trying, we were digging away with the trench, it eventually took us hours, but we got a little trench separate from each, what could at least could lie in. You know, if anything was coming across that way, it couldn't touch you. And then we got word that our, later on, I don't know when it was, but it was later on, we got word of our commander, Colonel Jackson. He got killed in the wadi.
What was he like?
He was a, you know, a real rough, tough bloke. He hadn't been with us a great long time. But he came and took over, and he was real, really rough. He wasn't busty or anything like that, but he was a real man, you know. Everything was tough. He got in amongst everything. From where I saw him two or three times. But he died a hero, you know. He was really in the front, leading.
Do you recall any of the conditions that were going on? There was a pretty nasty battle, this.
Yes, it was.
Had you got your gun across the wadi?
No, we didn't get across the wadi.
So you dug in on this side?
We dug on this side. I can just remember seeing it, the part of the wadi it was in the distance. We weren't really on the edge of it. We couldn't. Because we'd have had to manhandle them, you know, right up to there. And
what were you firing at? Did you have to?
Well, we were really waiting to fire at tanks, but on ours, we were there to fire at tanks, but we always kept hard rifles, you know, and the gun was there, but if I remember rightly, we were ready with ammunition for to use guns, and we were just firing at different things in the front. But you couldn't afford to waste ammunition, but we couldn't see anything really. You know, I mean, there was a wadi, it went over the top and it went down. But evidently there was chaos down in the wadi when they were caught in it, I believe, and that's when Jackson went. I think evidently, I don't know whether it was red or whether it was red or what, but I was told that he's really only recognised by his colour, his infantry gear he had on. And there's saying that again now, after Marath, I mean, on the road up to all these little places, but I can't remember a lot after Marath. I know we came right back.
Is there anything more about Marath you can recall?
I can't think of anything more, because it didn't last that long, really, you know. I know that they told us to... We had to say, as soon as we got there, we were going to go further up to the wadi, naturally, that was the object. But soon, when we just got to where we were, they were told us to scatter. I think that's when Albro got it. We had to scatter, disperse, you know, because instead of being in column, we were extended, but instead of being like that, disperse and stagger about. And that's how we ended up where we were. We didn't know where the others were, but Albro got it. It wasn't on my gun, but he got it.
Were you under severe shell fire yourself?
Well, as I say, that was that particular time when we were digging out trenches. I didn't know whether to keep the tin hat on or dig with it, because there was, I think I was looking through, you'd hear things whine, and it really before it dropped, you know, you'd hear them whine, you didn't know whether it was here or not. But not a great lot, but I did. I was in a bit of a state, because, you know, it was really bad. They seemed to be all above you, you know, coming over, whistling, and before the whistle ended, it was exploded.
Must be particularly unpleasant under
I think these come, these 88, what they call them, 88 millimetre guns, they used to fire from long range, and they used to burst above. They were the worst ones, I think.
Were there any other German weapons which you didn't like, you experienced but didn't like?
Well, his the Spander guns, these Spanders, they were very quick firing things, the likes of them, yeah.
Had you
and that's what you used to see at night when I was staying at night time with these and the tracer bullets. You could see the tracer, they could spray them like that, but you could see the lights, you know, coming towards you, the Spander. And they must have been the same as they were that far behind each other. Yeah.
Did you actually come across Germans, prisoners of war?
Yeah. Where was it? Or the different places? I was on.
But not at Marath.
No, not at Marath.
Did you realise how badly the battalion had been hit at Marath?
Well, no, not really. Because we were apart from it, you know, we were spread out. Now, if it had been infantry, when you're reformed, you're all together, but you're in groups when you're in the on an anti-tank gun. It's like the group, and then it's the other one. But I didn't get to know really too much about it, no.
Did you ever see
men infantry,
who...
you'd find that they were all together. There was more together than us.
Did you ever see men who cracked under a barrage or the strain? It must have been a
it was. I was just trying to think. No, not really. Not actually at the. No.
After Marath, where did you go?
There's only one. Pardon?
After Marath.
After Marath. Well, I came back. You see, but. I came back, but I don't know where to, but I know it was in hospital, and I think it turned out to be, I think it was around about Haifa or somewhere. I was in hospital around about, outside Tel Aviv or Haifa or somewhere like that, with the boys again. It just after Marath, I was all boils and abscesses, and I went into hospital. And then, of course, when I came out, that was when... I can't even remember the camp I came out where they were, but that the camp that I came back to, instead of being the 8th Battalion, it was the 1st Battalion, who just came from the duration of the war, practically 8 months. And that was when I was put in with them. And of course, it didn't take long then, we were sent to the island, of course.
What date would this be?
No, I couldn't tell you dates, no.
How did you feel about moving from...
Well, I did feel bad about it, because for a kick-off, I'd been with a lot of these lads since I was called... Some of them since I was called up, you know. And when it came to go on, there's a lot of them were regulars. I didn't know anybody at all in the first, and we didn't get a chance to know anybody because we were in transit for a while, and then we were sent to course to the island. Of course, I think it was to take this. Really, I think that the 1st Battalion was more obsolete because they'd been just the defence of Malta all the war. And when they came over here, they weren't up to the modern warfare as it was. And I think we were just sent in as a decoy to take the pressure from Crete and Sicily and give the Germans the impression that we were invading the Greece area, of course, and they shoved our battalion on there, and we were all captured because as if we hadn't anything heavy in the brain gun. When they went on to course, and we were there, I think it was a few weeks, and we were captured.
What was your job in the 1st Battalion? Where did you go?
Well, I was just a rifleman. Yeah.
Which company? Have you any idea?
No, I can't even remember. No, the company. But
officers,
we weren't there that long with it.
Names of officers?
I think there was one. I can't think of his name either. I'm nearly sure this fellow. We were getting driven up into the hills, into these ravines and crevices. We couldn't go any further. And then, of course, somebody had to give up. I think it was the commanding officer. I'm nearly sure he was with us in the 8th for a while, and then shifted. But that's where my memories, gone a bit.
So you went to Kos, although you can't remember the date. What are your memories of Kos when you landed there?
Well, when we landed there, it was at Famagusta, and then we were taken through up to this town, wherever it was, and there was a castle with a dungeon that played, but only open, towers right round. But in the castle, I remember there was all plants in that grown, like they had it as a market garden. And as we went through, we practically cleared the lot. There was tomatoes and all sorts like that. You say, well, we'd been living on grapes and that on Kos. We lived on grapes and that on Kos because it was grapevines we lived in. But when we got captured, we were taken into this big castle place, and there was all sorts of places. We went through it as if somebody had ploughed it up. And then from there, we were taken to Piraeus, the port.
Do you remember the actual event of being captured?
Really, what we were just told by our own officers to form up, because we had to come down from the hills. And when we got down from the hills, you say we'd been informed, told, we weren't altogether being told we were to give in, because we were just getting to the top of the hill, top of this mountain place, and we were getting nowhere, we couldn't have done things. So I think it was the officer in charge had to surrender. And we just came down, automatically the Germans were all waiting for us, and we told us to form into our columns, and they just walked us along. There was nothing we could do about it. Everything was taken from us. They lost personal things as well.
Such personal... They searched you?
They searched us, yeah. I lost
what were they taking away?
Well, I'd saved a lot of photographs and things like... Well, I think they took me army... my identity discs. I couldn't find them afterwards. But there was all sorts of, I think a lot of them were just taking stuff for themselves, which they were just for the taking things off. We hadn't money or anything like that. But I lost practically everything I had.
What were your feelings on being captured? Were you afraid?
We were dejected. We were dejected, but at the same time we were afraid because I'd never been held by Germans before. This was the first time. And this time we got used to them. But initially you jumped to do what they told you because they didn't think twice about, they wouldn't give you a bin, but give you a rifle. But you say just to keep in line, because there was odd ones that clever fellows that thought they wouldn't, but they They found out they had to go to the finish, and they were put on these boats. It was just small boats, you know, and they weren't too good anyway, because it seems if they were right down in the water, and we were taken, and the first stop we came to was Piraeus, the port, and then on to Greece. And from there we came right from, I mean, we didn't even get, there's nothing I could say about Greece, because we didn't, we were just there and straight through. Went through all the Balkans.
The people who were guarding you then, had they changed from the front line German troops into...
Oh, yes, they kept changing.
And how did they change?
There were some of them, as you got on, there were some of them really rotten, you know, that some of them that really had decent jobs. The ones on the front line, I think, were better than the ones that you came across later, such as ones that would rear up or anything, you know. But the others weren't too bad.
Did you see a lot of beatings?
Well, when I was as a prisoner of war, I was at a place not far from Leipzig.
This was your first camp?
Yes,
they brought you right through from Greece, hadn't
they? Yeah. Went right through them, you know, stopping in through Belgrade and all them.
Was this by train?
By train, yes. Like cattle truck with just a little bit of wire net and window at the top in each corner, you know.
How many would there be?
We had to lie when we were lying. If we lay down, those that could lie down, you were lying like sardines. And when one turned, a lot did. A lot of them were sitting up. And they had in the middle of the cattle truck, there was one of these, like army containers, what they used to, like a box. And it was... not refrigerated, but it was padded, you know, insulated. You used to put your big cans in to keep them cool or warm. That was what they were used for, but without the can in, this box was in the middle of the cattle truck for you to urinate or whatever in. That was all there was.
It must have been rather smelly.
It was, and I can't remember it even being empty, but it wasn't used much because we weren't getting much to eat or drink. But each stop that we came to, about once a day they used to let us out, because we were being shunted, you know, just from one place to another. And each stop we came to, used to jump out, and they're allowed to, if you had, some of them had a bit of tea or something like that, used to jump out with a tin can, and run to the engine where if it was letting it steam off, you know, and the rusty water coming out, used to make tea or whatever with that and run, jump back in. But they used to let you jump out, but to go sit along the train side if you want to do your business or a wet route like that, and once a day. But during the night, they used this box. We used to jump out, you'd scald yourself. You know, these great big old fashioned trains, and you used to spurt water out, used to save it, and take it back to cool down to drink. Because they weren't giving us anything, you see.
The problem of keeping your body clean, and you say you use the toilet. Did you have paper?
No, nothing like that. No.
So sometimes
there would be a hole dug, and not even a post along the centre of it. You had to lean against it, keep all of them sit into there. And I mean, what the majority, me especially, and I still had effects of it. You were trying to do what you could, and you never had one for it, and it was all blood, but all full of blood, you know, solid as a rock.
You say that
you used to make yourself ill trying to have one.
You say that they weren't feeding you very well.
No.
On the journey, we're talking about.
No, that's right. But you see, later on, we started to get a Red Cross parcel now and again. But on the journey, I can't remember them giving us anything.
About drinks, water?
We used to get a little bit of, maybe a drink of water. We must have saved it from somewhere, because I can't remember the Germans giving us any. And they were just shunted from one place to another. But when we got to, we were a few different stalags, we'd stop at a stalag maybe overnight or a few days, we'd get something then, get water, and their idea of soup and a bit of German sausage and things like that. But when we got to this, I think they called it Mucho.
This was your first camp, was it?
Yes, the first one. And when I got the first one, we were actually billeted above a public house. Above a public house. Didn't get any drink or anything like that. But public house. And we were issued, we used to work in a factory, right outside the factory. We used to go by train on the morning, digging trenches. We were allowed to do that, but nothing for the war weapon. Digging trenches for this, was it, electric company. We used to be digging trenches for them. And when we got back, we got a bowl of water with cabbage in or something and a little portion of German sausage and a wedge of black bread. Now that, you either had it then or you kept some for the next morning when we used to eat the soup and the sausage, hoping we could keep it off them, ate it straight away. But there was one in particular, he could make sandwiches out of that, a little fella, and he used to eat that and he used to take it to work with him next morning. Oh, we did it, I don't know, because that's all we got. And we'd been working, you know, full day, every day. And the sentries there, some of them were, there was an old watchman. There was an old watchman in charge of us, looking after us. The sentry used to just stand out the road. But the watchman, an old man, he used to supervise us, tell us what to do, digging the trenches and that. And when we did eventually get the first Red Cross parcel, he used saved his 50 cigarettes and all tin stuff, you know, all this dried tin stuff, and that was to take the cigarettes, have a cigarette at work with you. And one lad, he used to, this one was a Canadian parcel. He used to get Americans, sometimes British and Canadian parcel. We got cigarettes. And somebody that didn't smoke or something gave him one during our break. And he says, they would tell them where I'd come from, Canada. And he gave him this fella, old man, a cigarette. And he says, "Oh, Canada." He shoved in his mouth and ate it. He must have been a bucky chew, you see, and what a waste it was. But anyway, we used to get these parcels, supposed to get them every month, but it was seldom, you know, very seldom we got them. And it's surprising now, the stuff, though, that at the time, it could keep you going for till the next one, because porridge, for instance, in small tins, but was compressed, dried, and when you emptied it out, it came to a big heap like that. But the sentries, though, the party, you know, they used to be pressing you up. They wanted to know, they would always want to know when you were about Churchill and different things in England. They wanted to know about it. They were really curious. But if they saw, they would be talking to you, nice and laughing, but if they saw one of their superiors coming along, they would start belting you, just to keep cut. Otherwise, if he'd seen they were a friend with us, he would have got wrong himself. And he used to turn on you and belt you as soon as they saw him coming, yet they were frightened of their own, you know.
Were these young men, the guards?
Yes, there were a mixture. Some, as it came from the road, actually used to get some good tales from them. Some of them, it came, were veterans from the Russian front that came with frostbite and things like that. And it was used to be frostbite to the private parts and all that, you know, where they'd got wet and froze on them. And others were young ones. The young ones was the worst, you know. And we were allowed, in one place we were at, we were allowed to disperse in this factory. It was a great big place, hills and everything, you know, about as big as something. We were allowed to disperse. But the Hitler Youth used to be right round the outside and they used to shepherd us back, young lads. Another thing about the Russians, we had the Russian prisoners with us. Well, they had no Geneva Convention. And it used to be terrible how they lived. They used to make, one fellow used to make his own canvas shoes out of belting, machine belt. Passing putties, rags round his legs in the autumn and grease all over them. And that was him dressed for the winter. He never used to take them off. To keep himself warm. No. No, I was. But prison number one, I was going to say it was interesting. There was a lot of events in it, you know, that you